This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I am Ira Flatow. A little bit later in the hour, we're going to look at food safety. But first, this week, the City Council for Berkeley, California, voted unanimously to amend its city code to include rules for the use of nanotechnology. Now, under this ordinance, businesses that use or manufacture these tiny microscopic nanoparticles will be required to disclose information about the known risks of the materials and describe how they will be safely used and handled. And though that might not seem like much, it's one of the first governmental regulations in the country dealing with the products of nanotechnology. Joining me now to talk about the decision and some of the challenges facing nanotech research is Andrew Maynard. He's a scientific advisor to the Project on Emerging Nanotechnologies at Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars in Washington, D.C. He joins us from our Washington studios. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
I think that nanotechnology is safety is probably the last thing on most people's mind now that we hear about food safety and things like that.
I guess it probably is, yes, but something that's probably going to get bigger, if you forgive the pun, as the months and the years go by.
And why is that?
I think it's because it's a tremendously exciting technology, but it's a tremendously new technology as well, very much a new way of doing things, which has been at the lab for the last few years. But we're beginning to see it come out of the lab and into commercial products. And as it does, people are beginning to be aware not only of what it can do, but maybe what some of the risks might be associated with it.
Let's talk about those risks. What are the risks that we're dealing with here?
Well, we actually know very little at the moment. The thing that defines nanotechnology is that it's an unconventional way of doing things. If you take conventional sciences like physics, chemistry, and biology, you can achieve certain things. But what nanotechnology does is, by manipulating matter at an incredibly small scale, we can do things in a very unconventional, very novel way. And that's tremendously exciting. But you've got to ask the question, if these things behave in an unconventional manner, are there going to be new or unknown risks? And so take a really simple example. Take a lump of material, such as a lump of silver. If you make it incredibly small, you suddenly get to a point where these very small particles of this material, silver, can get to places that large particles couldn't go. So if you inhale them, they can maybe get to parts of the body that large particles wouldn't get to. If you release them into the environment, they will maybe accumulate in areas and places that large particles wouldn't. So that's one really simple example of some of the concerns. And it gets more complex from there on.
I was in the store the other day and saw a humidifier that was advertising it as cleansing the water using nanoparticles, nano silver particles, just like you say.
Silver is one of those things where we've seen a proliferation of it. Silver has been around for a long time as an antimicrobial agent. But with nanotechnology, people have been able to form it in such a way that it's much easier to put into products and much easier to make it effective in products.
So it could go into places in our bodies if we inhale it or ingest it and possibly lodge there or do things that we never considered it might be doing.
That's one of the concerns. For instance, if you take particles which we breathe in, we know now that if you get incredibly small particles in the lungs, rather than being cleared in the usual way, it's possible for them to actually lodge in the lining of the lungs, possibly get through to the blood. And as soon as these particles are in the blood, obviously, they can go to other organs where maybe you wouldn't expect them to go.
Mm-hmm. Last month, you co-authored a paper in the journal Nature setting out what you called five grand challenges for nanotechnology.
That's right. This came about because I think there's quite a lot of concern in the scientific community that we're not going to see the tremendous benefits of nanotechnology unless we understand what some of the risks might be and how to manage those risks. And it's always hard to really motivate people to do risk-based research. You don't often get a paper in Nature doing risk-based research, so we were pretty lucky on this in this respect. But what we want to do is to really energize the scientific community to take some of these issues seriously, and to do that, we set them what we call these five grand challenges.
Well, let's go through some of them.
Okay. Well, the first big challenge, let's go through them fairly briefly, but there are five areas which we thought were necessary to hit. The first is ways of measuring these really small particles or these nanostructured materials. This is something we can't do easily at the moment, but obviously if you want to know how much stuff you're exposed to, you need some way of measuring it. And so we had some specific recommendations on how we should go ahead with that.
So let me just stop you there. If I go into the doctor's office or something and he takes a blood test, they're never going to test for nanoparticles. particles.
They certainly wouldn't test for nanoparticles now. But even stepping back from that, say you're in a manufacturing plant, you're manufacturing something based on nanotechnology, and some of this stuff gets out into the air, and you want to know how much of it you're breathing in. That's not an easy thing to do at the moment, but it seems like an obvious thing you would want to do.
Mm-hmm. All right, number two.
So number two gets to measuring the toxicity. And if you think that the potential risk of these materials is going to depend on how much you're exposed to and how toxic the stuff is, the two things go hand in hand. So as long as we're with measuring these things, we also want to be able to evaluate how toxic they are or how benign they are. So the next challenge is having tests that effectively allow us to test for the toxicity of some of these new materials coming along.
Mm-hmm. Number three.
Number three is what we call life cycle assessment, and it's the holistic approach to working out how something will affect the environment around us over its whole lifetime, from when you actually manufacture it, to when you use it, to when you dispose of it, and when it eventually decomposes in the environment. And there are very few ways of doing this systematically for nanotechnologies and nanomaterials, so we're strongly encouraging people to take this holistic approach to how something might impact on the world around them.
Because there are tons and tons of nano waste going out into the environment, is there not?
Well, not engineered nano waste at the moment. There are lots of nano things around in the environment which are going out there. The stuff that comes out of the exhaust of your car, the stuff that comes out of stacks. A lot of it is nano size, but it's really messy nano. Mm-hmm. Engineered nanotechnology. It's going to be a problem in future years as we begin to dispose of these things, but it's something we can plan for now.
Mm. Number four.
Number four is looking a little bit long-term. I've already mentioned being able to test the toxicity of these things, but wouldn't it be wonderful if we could predict the potential toxicity of them? So as you're developing a new product, you can have a pretty idea at an early stage how harmful it might be, and you can actually work out how to make it safe. So this challenge is developing what we call predictive systems for working out how you evaluate how toxic something might be in certain situations, but also how it might interact with the world around it. And as soon as you can do that, you can begin to engineer what we would call safe technologies.
Mm-hmm. And the last one?
The very last one is really the glue that holds the previous four together. And that's a challenge to policymakers to come up with really good, sound strategies for supporting the research that is needed to ensure the safety of these new emerging technologies.
And does the new Berkeley regulation start to take on any of these challenges?
I'm not sure it starts to take on these challenges, but it certainly addresses a real need that people need to know how to work safely with these things, or they need to demonstrate that they've gone through a rational thought process when working and developing these technologies. So it doesn't address the research needs, but it does address some of the concerns over the uncertainty surrounding nanotechnology.
Mm-hmm. It's always the history shows that it's always helpful to come up with a solution before you get that giant problem.
Well, that's what we always like to see. It's not always easy, not always possible. And certainly if you look from the Industrial Revolution to nuclear power to a number of other things, we've tended to leap first and then look back later and work out how to clean up the mess.
Mm-hmm. Such as, industries like asbestos, which were put out of business, and look what happened to nuclear power when things were going bad for it. People didn't think these out that far in advance.
That's right. And of course, the beauty of nanotechnology, because we're at such an early stage, is we do have this wonderful opportunity to try and work out where it's going and how to get around some of the problems before they occur.
Mm-hmm. Do you see that this is the kind of legislation that's going to spread from Berkeley? We know California is a place where things start.
This seems to be fairly typical in some ways of Berkeley, and it's hard to tell whether this is going to promulgate across the country. But it's certainly going to be very interesting to see how it works there, whether it actually gives a sense of certainty to communities and business or whether it works the other way. More importantly, I think, though, if we're going to see success in this area, we've got to have some sort of national oversight rather than local oversight. And it's going to be interesting to see whether the Berkeley process feeds into any national legislation.
Is there any teeth in the Berkeley legislation? Any specifics that are really tough in there besides disclose? What is required to be disclosed?
Essentially, it's just asking labs and manufacturers to to be open and honest about what they're using, what they're doing with engineered nanomaterials, how they're using them, how they're disposing of them. So no, certainly from where I sit, it doesn't look that onerous. It's just forcing people to go through a thought process, thinking fairly rationally and seriously about what they're doing and being honest and open about what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And of course, the critical thing about it is that there is no limit to the quantity of material that has to be reported here. Usually with chemicals, if you're only handling a small amount of material, you don't have to declare it. What this ordinance says is with nanomaterials, because we know so little, there's so much uncertainty, whatever you're doing, at least think through what you're doing, report what you're doing, and think through how you're going to handle these things safely.
And how soon will this ordinance go into effect if it's not already in effect?
To my knowledge, now it's been voted in, it's actually in effect.
Hmm. Yeah, and is there do industries have a certain amount of time to comply to get their act together to report these things, or does it take effect immediately?
It requires annual reporting, and I don't know what the first reporting period is going to be, but certainly it requires industries and labs every year to come up with their list of what they're handling, what they're doing about it.
Do you think nanoparticles should be classified as a toxic material itself or regulated that way?
No. You've got to be more specific. Nanoparticles generically are neither toxic nor safe. You've got to look at specific types of nanoparticles. So, for instance, you've got to say whether you're talking about silver or titanium dioxide or gold or even something more complex than that. But each one is going to be subtly different.
And what would you like? What would you like to see as the next step in this process?
Well, the next step is, from my perspective, we've got to base decisions on sound science, which means we've got to have a really good strategic research program that takes some of the unknowns and provides clear answers to them. And those are unknowns such as how do you measure exposure, how do you control exposure, how do you understand what impact might be. Mm-hmm. I think as soon as we have a good, robust strategic research program, and I think that's got to be at the federal level, we can begin to answer some of these questions in a scientifically sound manner.
Well, Dr. Maynard, thank you for taking time to join us today.
Thank you very much.
Andrew Maynard is the scientific advisor to the Project on Emerging Nanotechnologies at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars in Washington. We're going to take a break and come back and talk lots more about the ongoing food scares. What can you eat these days that you're not afraid to eat at the salad bar? Stay with us. We'll be right back.